coming up on the Joyful Learning Pod.
I'm so grateful that librarians and teachers are intentional about adding books by disabled authors about the disabled experience to their libraries. I think, gosh, it's so important to see it. I don't know if I realized how much it would have mattered to me to see it.
Welcome to another episode of the Joyful Learning Podcast. I am beyond excited to welcome one of my favorite authors out in the world today, Natalie Lloyd. Natalie and I go way back to 2014, and I'm going to share a little bit about how I came to know her and her books. And I've been looking forward to this conversation since we organized it. And you, Natalie, were literally one of the first people that came into my mind when Carrie and I decided to kind of just take action and put this podcast into being. So welcome to our show, Natalie.
Oh, thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
So Natalie and I met in person for the very first time back in 2014 at UConn. And every winter, they would have the Children's Book Fair. And I had gone to it a few times. And I know that I knew who you were already because I had brought a copy, my copy of A Snicker of Magic, which I believe, was that your debut novel?
It was. That was the very first one.
Oh, and that book has just stayed with me for all of these years. And the word spindiddly has become part of my lexicon. And and I always look forward to new words I'm going to learn that you introduce in books. And so that was when I got to meet you for the very first time in real life. And I'll share a few other anecdotes as the conversation goes on, because as Carrie and I were planning for this interview, just so many things came back to me that I had forgotten about special connections that I feel like I have with you. So this is just really special for me. The title officially of this episode is The Joy of Magical Realism with Natalie Lloyd. And we're going to talk a little bit throughout also what is magical realism for listeners who might not be familiar with that phrase. So be thinking a little bit about that too and what you would like to add, if anything. And I'm just kind of curious if you had intended for your books to be that or if they just kind of came out that way.
Oh, well, first of all, let me tell you that I have been looking forward to this for so long. I think I emailed you and said, this kind of feels like we're going to have a slumber party, even though this is an interview. But it's fun. It's like having coffee with friends. And excuse my voice, I have Tennessee allergies that are going crazy right now. So I think it's okay at the moment. But oh, I am really tickled to be here and to talk about books. And I am so grateful to you, Melissa, and to Carrie, because that, I mean, 2014 was almost 10 years ago.
Isn't it crazy?
It's nuts. Yeah, time is just nuts. I know. And you have been such a champion for the books that I've written. You know, I remember back when I queried A Snicker of Magic, which was my first novel. It got rejected quite a bit, as novels often do. And I remember one agent said, I love the story, but it's just too quiet for a book. And so it always surprised me when people would just embrace it. You know, this quiet book that was about small town magic. And so I'm really grateful to you and all of the teachers and librarians who keep finding readers who want to try the books out. So as far as what my books are called, I didn't really know how to classify them. You know, I know the term magical realism typically refers to like Latin American novels that have magic in them. So I tried to think, okay, well then what are these novels? Because I grew up reading books like Roald Dahl's books, like Matilda and Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. And I love this magic in the real world kind of thing. And I thought, gosh, are they Southern magic? Are they Southern fried magic? Are they real time fantastical? So I don't know what to classify them as always. But I know I love writing about people in very real world situations who become blissfully aware of the magic all around them. And at first in the novels, it usually is literally magic. It's like a magical creature, or in A Snicker of Magic, there was this ice cream in the town, and that was kind of the gateway to all this other magic that was hovering in this place that Felicity discovered. But at the end of the books, and this isn't a big spoiler, I think they always realize that the magical parts are really the best stuff. It's the love and the joy they get to feel. It's the fact that you get to experience happiness again, even after loss. It's connectedness and belonging somewhere. You know, I feel like the end of my books is always people just finding a place to belong, even if it's not where they thought it would be. So I guess I did think I would write that, because that's always what I love to read. Even now, one of my favorite authors, she's an adult author, but Sarah Addison Allen is one of my favorites. She just put out a book called Other Birds that I'm going to take the rest of the day and read later. But she does so well at that, at having these really fun places and these characters that are really struggling to figure out what they're doing. They feel stuck. They don't know where they belong. And then all of a sudden, all this magic comes through in this town, and that kind of leads them in the right direction. So I think a lot of writers probably tend to write what they love to read. I know that's true for me.
Oh my gosh. So many things you said that I just, first of all, the idea that an editor or publisher would think a book was too quiet is interesting to me a little bit. Not necessarily good, interesting, but, and I actually, one of the things that I do when I read books, especially books that really get into my heart, I collect golden lines. And your books, I can't even tell you, they are the books that I have collected the most golden lines from. So A Snicker of Magic, I have an entire page of golden lines. And The Key to Extraordinary, I also, my book, I just pulled it off the shelf this morning. So many tabbies that I just wanted to go back, be able to go back and just reread those words when I was feeling like I needed something. And in your newest book that we're going to talk about momentarily, Hummingbird, The Book of Your Heart, we're going to talk a little bit about your note to the reader in the copy that I have. But one of the golden lines that I wrote down that sparked when you said that comment, that from the person that you pitched your book to for the first time, it said, the quote is, "I love quiet people. They always have so much going on in their heads and their hearts." And I think books that are quote unquote quiet, readers need those. There are so many readers out there that need that message of hope and joy. And so many of us feel like we don't know exactly where we fit in. And I just think the words that you put on the page together are more than a story. They're a feeling. And yeah. I think that's where, for me, that magical realism also, you make the regular everyday stuff feel like magic.
Thank you.
So let's talk a little bit about Hummingbird. It came out in August, I believe. Yes. So it's kind of a brand new baby book a little bit. Like, it's just getting its wings, and it's only been out for a few weeks. And this was a question that Carrie and I had. We are curious, because I haven't had a chance to look at the finished version yet. I have it in my library, but I haven't opened it. It's just, I don't think it even lasted on the shelf for more than a day after school started. But I'm curious if you have the Dear Reader in the final published book, or is that letter only in the advance copy?
It is in the final book too. In the finished copy of the book, it's the author's note at the end.
I am so glad, because I'm going to just stop talking, and I want you to tell us about Hummingbird.
Oh, thank you for letting me talk about this book. Like you said, Hummingbird is the book of my heart. It's the story of a girl named Olive. She's 11 years old and lives in this tiny Tennessee town. She's the only kid homeschooled in her town. Her only friends are her parents and her pet pelican that, you know, this bird that just showed up in her yard that she feeds.
Everybody needs a pet pelican, I have to say.
Who doesn't, right? And she's kind of lonely. She really wants to make a friend. And like I said, there's nobody else homeschooled there. It's not like she gets together with other kids. And so she's really petitioning her parents to go to the local middle school, Macklemore, but they're hesitant because Olive has a brittle bone disease called osteogenesis imperfecta, which just means her bones break easy. And she's a wheelchair user in the book. She says sometimes she uses a walker as well, but they don't want her to get hurt. basically. So she has to work pretty hard to convince them, hey, I can do this now. I will be careful. I can take care of myself. I got this. And she finally gets to go. And it's a disaster, as sixth grade can sometimes be, until she hears a legend about a creature in the woods who grants wishes to people brave enough to seek it. And with the help of some new friends, that's what she does. She goes to try to make her wish come true, and she unleashes a whole lot of magic in the town and in herself in the process. So when I started writing Hummingbird, there were these themes that I love to dance around in stories, you know, family, belonging, magic. I live in Tennessee. I grew up in Appalachia. I live in Chattanooga now. So I love nature. I always say I'm more of a nature, like sitting on the back porch looking at it kind of nature lover. Yeah. Because I'm not much on bugs and heat, but I love it. I love the woods and the mountains and all that. And they show up a lot in my stories. So all of that was coming again when I was trying to think of what I wanted to do with Hummingbird. But what surprised me is that when I pictured Olive, she looked like me, because I also have brittle bone disease. I have osteogenesis imperfecta. And when I was Olive's age in elementary and middle school, I used a wheelchair or sometimes a walker if I was recovering from that. And then because my type of OI is mild, there are all kinds of different types. My bones did get strong enough that eventually, like by high school, I was able to walk on my own, still being very, very careful, which is also the case now. And so she and I had that in common. And I thought, I don't know if I want to do this, which doesn't really make sense because I am disabled. I've written about disabled characters before. I love that Kid Lit is becoming more and more full of characters with all kinds of bodies. But I didn't know how to write Olive without giving her the hard parts. And I didn't know if people would want to read the hard stuff. You know, I thought people are really going to want to read like the good. Nobody wants to hear about how frustrating her body is. So at first, when I was writing the book, I focused on the magic, the adventure in Olive's world. And I tried to make her disability kind of, you know, in the back somewhere. Like, yeah, I have it, but I'm totally adapted. I'm doing great. And the book had no heart. Something just wasn't clicking for me. And I kept talking to my editor about it. And I said, I just don't know what to write. Like, I don't know what's missing here. And sadly, this is what it took to help me see what I was missing. In 2019, the pre-pandy years, if you will, I was walking through my kitchen late one night to check and see if a door was locked, and I slipped in dog drool. And on my way to the floor, I heard a snap in my leg, and I had broken my femur for the first time in many years. And a femur is supposed to be like the toughest bone in your body, but mine are like ticking time bombs. Those have always been my nemesis, or my weak femurs. And it broke and it was horribly painful. I had surgery, had a rod put in, and I did physical therapy and all that. And I remember coming home and just feeling so stuck. You know, all of a sudden I had to ask for help again for like every little thing, especially early on. And you could probably relate to this if you've had any injury. Everything's just so different. You don't realize how easy it was to do some things. And then suddenly,
this kind of just lose all your independence because.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. And I got more and more frustrated. You know, I remember because I was feeling it again, what it was like when people will talk to the person pushing your wheelchair and not to you, or how you can't get in some buildings and all of these things. But honestly, the thing that made me the saddest is just how I felt about myself. I got really depressed in that season. And I remember one night I was sitting beside my husband, Justin, on the couch, and Carrie and I were talking about some of the things I wrote in the author's note, but I wrote a little bit about Justin. I always say he's like, you know, Gilbert Blythe, if Gilbert had tattoos.
I are on so many levels, are kindred spirits. I can't even tell you.
But he is such a sweetheart. And I remember sitting beside him and I was like, you know what? I feel so broken and I hate my body right now. And he said, you are not broken. Your leg's broken, but you're not broken. And something about hearing that from somebody I love who really saw me and saw my heart helped me find a way through it. And it also helped me see, this is what's missing with Olive's story. Because for me, disability is never on the back of my mind. It influences every decision I make. And when I was 12 or 11, I think what I was trying to give Olive is a free pass out of the insecurities I had, which will not be everybody's insecurity. You know, disability is a very personal experience. This is just mine. But I remember at that time looking around thinking, oh, my body's not changing. Like my friends' bodies are changing. You know, I've got all these scars. My legs are kind of crooked. You know, I'm a very common thing with OI is that you're short, and I'm still am short. I'm 4'9". I've always been the shortest girl in any class. Even now when I do school visits, I'm the shortest girl in the class. Oh. And all of those things just weighed on my heart a lot in that season. I thought, am I going to get to feel independent as I get older? Do I get to have like this life I'm dreaming of? Do I get to fall in love someday, even with a body like this? And when I actually started writing from that place, that's when I felt like the book made sense to me. You know, Olive sees the world through, literally, she loves to wear these heart-shaped glasses. She thinks it helps her see the world in a more spiritual
way. I have a pair of said heart-shaped glasses that I got at ALA when I got to see you again this last June. My good friend Allie Shilp and I gushed, waited in line, got the glasses, got our photo taken with you.
There.
Yes. So yeah. We're going to add that photo because I love that photo so much. We're going to add that to the show notes and I'll send you a copy of that photo.
Perfect. But that's how she sees people. That's not how she saw herself. And right. So when I could write from that place where it was all together, because that's how life is, all the good and the bad tangled up together all the time, then I found Olive's heart and I was ready to tell her story.
Oh, and her story is just, it is, it's hard to read some parts to see how she is feeling about herself, how some people outside of her see her. But I just love the way you always develop characters and find these such interesting, unique personalities and bring them all together to be this family that they're so deep, they're so rich, they're so unique and diverse, and they just always complement one another so much. For instance, like the two fathers in Olive's life, her father and then her stepfather couldn't be more different. And yet they get along and they want the best for Olive. Each fills a different need for her. Talk a little bit about how you develop your characters. How do you choose who's going to do what in your stories as the story progresses?
Oh, I love that that's the example you mentioned. Olive does have two dads. Jupiter is her dad. He's kind of her hippie dad. And he is no longer
lives
married.
Lives in a yurt, right? He lives in a
yurt. Yes, yurt. Her house, right in the backyard. He's really odd and quirky, but he's embraced it and they've embraced it. You know, there's a part where Olive says, we just orbit around his weird and wonderful light. And he's a great dad. And then her mom has remarried Coach Malone, the local PE teacher. And he's also a really great person in Olive's life. And that particular relationship came out because I saw so much co-parenting that was being done so well within my friend groups. You know, when I talk in schools and meet parents, that's something I feel like people are navigating in a very new and different way, and it can be very good. So I wanted to show that all families look different and unique. When it comes to character development overall, that's one of my favorite parts of writing. And usually I can start out with what I picture in my mind, and who even knows where that comes from? You know, what even starts all the inspiration for different characters? I think there's probably a nugget of somebody I love in every character I've written, minus the, you know, bad guy characters. But all the good ones.
We have some of those too, right? And we have to just accept them for who they are sometimes. And
revenge characters. But I think I start there. And then as I revise the book, and that's a long process, that's when I can really dig into those characters and think about how they're relating to the main character and each other and what their story is and what they're looking for in this story. So I love reading books with stories that feel full for secondary characters without taking away from this big journey you're on. I like a full story like that. So thank you for saying that. That's what I try to write every time.
One of the characters that I wanted to talk a little bit more about is the teacher, Mr. Watson.
Yes.
So now So I read this book in April, and one of the golden lines that I wrote down, not related to Mr. Watson, but related to school and specifically libraries. I am a librarian, and I always, always appreciate when authors write about libraries or how positive, and you include books in all of the books that you write. Like, books are very important to your characters in one way or another. And one of the quotes about libraries, you said, most places don't look as wonderful as you imagine them, but libraries are different. Libraries are always better. So I loved that quote about libraries. And then throughout the story, as your character is entering middle school for the first time with challenges above and beyond what middle school is. Middle school is rough for, I think, 99% of people. Yes. She really connects with the teacher, Mr. Watson. And it was maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago on your Twitter feed. I was so excited to read a post that you had created with some photos of little Miss Natalie Lloyd as, I believe, a third grader. And your teacher was Mr. Watson. Mm-hmm. And so I'm going to put a link to that whole, that tweet in the show notes. But could you tell us a little bit, in your own words now, about that story and how that came to be?
Oh, I would love to. I would love to talk about Mr. Watson. And then remind me, I want to tell you something about libraries too, because you're a librarian and I adore you and want you to hear it. But Mr. Watson was the third grade teacher at Birchfield Elementary School, where I went to school, and he was a legend. To this day, people talk about Mr. Watson. They remember the books he read. I mean, it's not just me. He was just this wonderful teacher and wonderfully kind human that made people feel so loved when they were in his room. But my older sister had had Mr. Watson, and I'd heard her talk about how much she loved him. So when I started third grade, I was pretty excited and I was not let down. He was the best and the kindest. I remember every day after lunch, he would read to us, and it wasn't reading for comprehension. He would say we could rest our heads on our desk if we wanted. We could listen. And I think that helped us all see that reading could be rest. It could be for joy. He would pick such beautiful books to read. I remember Julie of the Wolves was one of them. He would recommend books for us to check out from the library. But more than that, and as an adult looking back, I've realized this, he made me feel so included in the class, because this was the 80s. You know, I'm not sure a lot of schools in the 80s had classrooms that were super accessible for kids with any kind of disability. Even now, I can't imagine the work teachers and librarians are doing to try to make their classrooms inclusive for everybody when you have like zero budget to do it. You know, you're kind of on your own to try to make it happen. But I always felt like such a part of things in his room. I mean, there was always a way for me to do something, always a way for me to be involved. I even remember one time my parents couldn't go on a field trip with me. I had like an attendant at school who would like help me to the bathroom and stuff like that, like Olive does in Hummingbird. But obviously, without my parents, there was no way I could get on a bus, you know, or anything like that. And Mr. Watson just carried me onto the bus and carried me off, you know, and unloaded my wheelchair. Like, it was not, I mean, he's just the most kind person. And he has read the book. he knows how much I love him. Here's what's funny. He's told me many times now I can call him John because we're both adults.
But isn't it weird?
To do it. I can't. I know. He will always just be Mr. Watson. Oh, but the Twitter thread you're talking about, he had a student teacher that year. At that time, her name was Miss Fusen. Now she's Miss Karras. She teaches in Knoxville, Tennessee. And she reached out to me and said, oh, Mr. Watson sent me your book. I don't know if you remember me. And of course I did. We all did. I remember my friends and I would, you know, fight over who got to be Miss Fusen when we played school with our stuffed animals and siblings. And so it was so cool to hear from her. She sent pictures of that classroom, and it was so cool to see all of those little friends I had then, little me, and all the big dreams that I know that kid with messy hair had in her mind. It was really, really cool.
Well, and I'm going to read one of the comments you make in the thread. It says, I remember the books we read. I remember the names of my classmates. I remember feeling like I was part of the class, never separate, even with my wheelchair walker. All that to say thank you, teachers and librarians. It's legit magic you make. I'm a better writer because of it. So again, like, everybody out there listening, they may not be an educator. They might not be a librarian. But just know that everybody out there has the potential to make a positive impact in the life of anybody you interact with. I'm just so grateful that you were able to reconnect with that student teacher. And then that student teacher made you think back to all of those amazing memories. And I am so glad that Mr. Watson has had a chance to read this book. That is just something special. That
he was also one of the first teachers who told me I was a good writer. And when you're a kid, things like that, that really speak to that thing. Sometimes that secret thing you love to do. I don't know that I was showing my writing to anybody besides my mom back then, but it stuck with me forever. So thank you. Yes.
That's a very powerful story and testimony. So something kind of fun, a few things that like I said, we are kindred spirits. And if you don't know that connection and Gilbert Blythe, like that is Anne of Green Gables.
Absolutely.
This last summer, I had an opportunity to see the musical Anne of Green Gables. It was here in Connecticut. Oh my gosh, did I love it? I wanted to go back again the next night. I was like reciting some of the lines, probably to the chagrin of the people sitting around me. I kept turning around and like these women that were behind me during the intermission were talking about like the plot of the story and they were getting some, they didn't really know it. So I very politely and kindly kind of like set them on the right path about what this book was, our story was really supposed to be about. And every time something would happen, I turn around and we would share a smile. Like, you know, Anne is just so spunky and people can't see your face because this is audio. And if you don't know what Natalie looks like, we both have reddish hair. And so that is one of the other things we share. And I tell people that when they ask what my favorite book is, as a librarian, that's very hard. I'm sure kids ask you as an author, is your favorite book that you've written? And I always kind of giggle because I know a student's going to ask that when I do an author visit. Right. And I kind of always know what the author's, you know, sort of going to say that they don't pick favorites. But Anne of Green Gables is probably the book that has stuck with me for the longest. And I always tell the story of the scene where she tries to dye her hair.
It's perfect.
And yes. It turns green. Mm-hmm. And I say, I hated my hair when I was younger. I would get teased because of it. But when I read that book as a sixth grader, I said, red is better than green. And I will never attempt to change or alter my hair in any way for the color. And I haven't, and I'm glad I didn't. But I think that that's just to me, books can have such an impact. And when you read a book that somehow you directly connect yourself with, and it is a mirror for you, that that is a life-changing experience. And so you talked about how this is a book of your heart and this, you were Olive going through a lot of these feelings when you were younger. And I just think it is so important. Like you mentioned in the beginning of this discussion, we need books that celebrate and represent all bodies.
Absolutely. Yep.
Are there any others that come to mind from the recent past that maybe people need to know about?
Oh, that's a great question. You know, somebody was asking me yesterday or a few days ago, time is nothing now.
Yes, that's for sure.
In the post-Pandy world, time is a myth. But I was on a panel and someone said, did you see your disability in books when you were a kid? And I didn't. That doesn't mean they weren't there. I'm sure someone was writing it. I didn't see those. I kind of jokingly said the first person I saw in a wheelchair in media was like Zach Morris playing wheelchair basketball, which doesn't really count.
Saved by the Bell. For all of those people out there who don't know that reference.
But it's exciting to be part of Kid Lit now. I think you do see more of it. And I'm going to think of way more when I get off. But when I think of like physical disability representation, there's a new book, young adult. Chaz Hayden is the author, and it's called The First Thing About You. That one is phenomenal. I've just started reading it. It's got a great voice and a great plot. It's super fun. And young adult's not even usually where I land because my teenage years, I don't know, something about reading young adult, I kind of go back into my teenage mind and that's not my happy place, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know how to explain it. So I do read them, not as much as I read middle grade and adult, but that one's great. Roll With It by Jamie Summer was great representation.
Did you see that there's a sequel on the horizon?
I did. I'm so excited to see that. Those are the two that come to mind right off the top of my head, but I'm sure there are way more and I will think of those when I'm not having a mind.
Yeah, no. And it is, for me, it's really hard to come up with titles on the spot, honestly. If I, you know, I have to kind of think about it. And then once I start thinking, they start to flow. So for our listeners also, if you have titles that just really resonated, or, and it can be K-12, it could be adult, we can just start in like a list of books that we can start curating to share with, you know, other readers out there and librarians and teachers and families.
And on that note, I'm so grateful that librarians and teachers are intentional about adding books by disabled authors about the disabled experience to their libraries. I think, gosh, it's so important to see it. I don't know if I realized how much it would have mattered to me to see it, because it's not like I thought about it as a kid. You know, I was still feeling what the characters felt. I don't remember thinking none of these characters look like me or move through the world like I do. But I remember my parents introducing me to a lady, and I had to be in middle school at the time, a lady who also had OI, who was in her 30s. She had a much more severe form of OI than I do. I think she told me she'd have like 140 fractures. I've only had like 13 or something like
that. Wow.
But she was working in the arts full time. You know, I met her and her husband. She was really cool. And that really did something to me as a kid. That made me think, oh my gosh, like nothing I want to do is outside of the limits of being able to do it, even if I do it with a wheelchair or walker or whatever it takes. So representation in that area is so important and so good. So thank you for putting those books in your library.
Well, and thank you for giving us such rich content to share with our readers very enthusiastically, I must say. Okay, so a couple things to kind of wrap up, some fun things. So I wrote down in my notes, Dolly Parton, Reba McEntire, and Bon Jovi.
Love it, yes.
So tell us more about, you are a child, as I am, of the 80s and the 90s.
Absolutely.
And so, yeah, talk about how those three names, why they're significant to you.
Okay, here's where they come into play in the story. I have never tried to hide my love for Dolly Parton. It has been lifelong. I feel like everybody's on the boat now. Everybody loves Dolly. It's like one universal truth. We all love Dolly. But she is a Smoky Mountain girl. I'm also a Smoky Mountain girl. And so I think, you know, as a kid, how cool that I got to see Dolly Parton everywhere on TV. I heard her on the radio. I saw giant billboards for Dollywood. I mean, you get to see this Tennessee artist being exactly who she is, doing her thing. And I loved it. I remember watching a special she did talking about the first song she wrote. And she said she was just a little girl when she wrote her first song. It was about her doll. I even remember the words. I will not sing it for you, but I remember the words. And I went and plugged in this little keyboard and I tried to write my own song. That was not my path. But I think one of the reasons I love creative writing so much is because I love Dolly Parton so much. And I would listen to her albums and her music, even when I didn't know exactly what the songs meant. There was just a whole lot of joy I gravitated toward and a whole lot of truth. Same with Reba McEntire. If you like classic 90s country music, they were just the queens. And I loved her music. I love her confident vibe. And Hummingbird, Olive actually names her wheelchairs after the two of them, Dolly and Reba. I did not name my wheelchair, but I love that Olive did. I can't believe I didn't think of that. So that's where they came into play. And then Bon Jovi was the name of the library sloth in the book. And that reminds me of what I wanted to tell you about the library, because somebody said the library is so over the top compared to the rest of the school. And that was intentional. It is a very fantastical, highly imagined library full of birds. Somebody asked me where they poop. I mean, I don't know. They're magical birds. Maybe they don't poop, but or somebody's there to get it. I don't know. But it's full of birds, full of books. It's just full of joy. And the reason I did it that way is because I think about places you see that you love when you're little, and then looking back as an adult and you think, oh, it didn't really look like that. But I remembered it being so much bigger and so much more beautiful. And when I hear students talk about the library and how it's their safe place, how they love to go to the library and have lunch and hang out with their librarian, I thought, okay, that's going to be the magical, fantastical, over the top place in Olive's world. You know, there are parts of this school that are hard for her, but the library is the place that's just pure magic, start to finish. So that's why there is a sloth in the library. His name is Bon Jovi, just because I thought that was funny. And he climbs up and shelves books for the librarian. He cuddles with the students. Oh. I would love to have a library sloth, honestly.
Oh, my gosh. I do, too. Although I might need some other animal as well to help with the book reshelving. Because let me just tell you, that takes a long time on a regular speed. And at a sloth speed, I'm not sure how that would go over. But I did. I loved those parts, those little pieces that you just add that are just fun and fantastical. It goes along with the magical realism. So thank you for those stories, though. And Dolly and Reba have played an important role in my entire life as well. Growing up in Minnesota, on a farm, like country music is what I've grown up with. And I've put this out to the universe a couple of times. I would do quite a bit to have Dolly Parton be a guest on this show, because she has brought so much joy to my life, to my mom's life, to Carrie's life, and just with the Imagination Library too. I just feel like she is just doing so many amazing things, and she's such an inspiration.
Oh, she is a magical human. You know, I always say in my dream world, she's like my fairy godmother. So I love it. I'll put that out in the universe for you.
Please do. And I'm to end this little segment here, there's a quote that you put in Hummingbird by Dolly Parton that I just love. And it is, "Find out who you are and do it on purpose."
Yeah, I love that one.
Oh, and that just like kind of ties everything together for me with you. So the last question that I'm going to ask you, I could literally, Natalie, talk to you for 4 hours and not be done. I'm so glad we've had a chance to have the slumber party / coffee hour this morning. But my question is, what is currently bringing you joy in your life right now?
I love this question. I knew the answer as soon, because before we talked, you gave me a little heads up. I'm going to ask you what's bringing you joy. And I knew exactly what I was going to say. In the mornings right now, I try to read a poem by Mary Oliver every morning. With my mom, I call it my morning with Mary, or morning words from Mary, or something like, this is what Mary said this morning. But I will go either on my back porch, or we have these camping chairs set up in the backyard, and I'll go out there and the dogs are usually hanging out playing, and I read a poem. And some mornings it's just beautiful, and some mornings it hits me directly in the heart. And that gives me a ton of joy. It reminds me to be gentle when I move through the day. It reminds me to be gentle with myself. And it reminds me to look for the little beautiful, perfect pieces of magic that I might overlook in an ordinary day. So that's what's giving me joy, reading a poem every morning.
Oh my gosh. Well, that I couldn't find a better way to end this conversation than that story. And one last quote that I'm going to share from Hummingbird that wraps all of this up together, I feel like, is, everybody in the world deserves joy. So thank you, Natalie, for bringing me countless moments of joy. I go back and I reread your books. I reread my golden lines that I've collected. Everybody who's listening, I do try to curate my golden lines on Twitter using the hashtag Melissa's Golden Lines. And all of Snicker of Magic is up there. I haven't had a chance to put all of Hummingbird in one kind of thread, but I, throughout as I was reading, I would tweet a few of them out. But they're all in my reader's notebook, and the joy kabooms hashtag is something also that I love. So I hope to see more of that on Twitter.
Oh, I love it too. Thank you all so much for letting me be part of this. I was just excited to listen. I was over the moon ticker bouncing when you asked me to record it. So thanks for what you're doing. Thanks for sharing stories the way you do. I wish y'all were on my back porch right now so we could just keep on talking.
Me too. And last, I promise. Tell our listeners how they can find you if they want to get more Natalie, which everybody should want more Natalie.
I am online. My website is natalieloyd.com, and that's two L's. And I'm also on Facebook, Natalie Lloyd Author, and on Instagram at Natalie Lloyd Books. Twitter, I think it's _ Natalie Lloyd, but basically just type in my name and you'll find me.
Oh, well, thank you so much. I hope you have a very joyful rest of your day, and I can't wait to connect again sometime soon.
Same. Thank you all so much. Happy reading.